Radio Netherlands, the home of high frequency since 1927.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine for shortwave listeners. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Hello, and let's start this time with a follow-up to last week's programme, which looked at the amateur radio activities on board the recent European Space Lab. That prompted this call to our answer line.
My name is Peter Walsh of Glenroy, Victoria, Australia. Just like to tell you, Jonathan, I heard the satellite over here in Melbourne, Australia, and on the next Media Network programme, could you give the address for QSLs?
OK, Peter. Reception reports should go to the club station DF0VR, just DF0VR, in Narzissenweg 10. I'll spell that Narzissenweg, Narzissenweg 10, D8031, in Oberpfaffenhofen, which I'll also spell OBER. PFAFFENHOFEN, Oberpfaffenhofen in West Germany, and include two international reply coupons with a report. Now to the Thames Estuary, off the English coast.
Laser 558, where you're never more than a minute away from music.
DTI in this case means the British Department of Trade and Industry, who've been closely monitoring the operations of Radio Caroline and Laser 558, two pop music ships in international waters. Laser supporters released this record on the UK market. On Wednesday, the 6th of November, it began to look as though the DTI had succeeded, as Radio Caroline reported at noon.
It's 12 o'clock midday. Radio Caroline News, brought to you by Newsweek magazine.
Good afternoon. The offshore radio ship MV Communicator, home of Laser 558, sailed from the Nocte Channel today, escorted by the British government surveillance vessel Guardline Tracker. The communicator had been plagued by generator problems since yesterday, and after a night of heavy storms on the North Sea, the government vessel took up position alongside the ship earlier today.
According to the British captain, Patrick Paternoster, lack of power forced Laser to ask for technical assistance from the nearby surveillance ship chartered by the British government in order to raise the anchor and sail into the large port of Harwich. The media were waiting to greet them, plus the American general manager, John Catlett, who'd also arrived. Ray Rogers of the Television South TV company asked Catlett what he was planning to do.
I'm going out to visit the vessel, and I expect that the American disc jockeys will be coming on to land.
But you're going out at a police launch, is that significant?
They offered me a trip and I accepted.
Now, can you tell me what is the future of the station going to be? Are you going to open up again?
I can't tell you the future.
But surely if you get the ship going again, there's nothing to stop you putting to sea, is there, and starting up Radio Laser again?
I don't know.
One of the seven American disc jockeys who disembarked made it clear he thought the medium wave pop station was finished.
Just about every generator went kaput all at the same time. It was basically a matter of bad luck that everything all went at once. We had some rough seas out there, force 10 winds, and it was the opinion of the captain, who is in charge of our safety, that it was not safe to be out there in the condition that we were in, so it was his decision to bring the ship in.
What happens now? Is this the end of the line for Laser?
As far as I can tell, I don't know much about the legal ramifications of bringing a ship in, or if the fact that it had a radio station on it, if that makes a whole lot of difference. As far as I know, we're done. And we're waiting around now basically to do a little touring, just to be tourists for a while, and then probably be going back to the United States.
Although the American crew members have been allowed to go, the British police in Essex are now investigating possible legal action against the other four British crew members. They've been released, but may have to appear in court later. The Department of Trade and Industry inspectors declared the ship unseaworthy last week, partly due to a faulty radar. Repairs are underway. But even when these are done, the radio ship is currently prevented from leaving because of two legal cases which have now arisen. One from the former laser engineer Paul Alexander Rusling, author of a book on the ship. He's issued a writ for £7,000. The former owners of the MV Communicator, Guardline Shipping Limited, based in Great Yarmouth, say Laser owe them money too. Ironically, perhaps, the Laser ship and the British government ship, Guardline Tracker, are sisters, as George Darling, managing director of Guardline Shipping, explained to me.
Well, the two ships were built by the same yard in Germany. They both each followed each other by a year. In fact, there was a series of three ships built, and we bought the whole three of them.
And how old are they?
Laser was built in 1954, as I recall. And I think our Tracker was built in 1953.
They give it the name MV Communicator. Was that its original name?
No. When it was with us, it was the Guardline Seeker. We sold the Guardline Seeker to a firm called Deka Overseas Inc. D-E-K-A. Deka Overseas Inc. in Madison Avenue, New York. We latterly find out that it was a Panamanian registered company.
So how much do they owe you?
£5,000.
This is All Europe Radio, Laser 558, broadcasting live from the MV Communicator in international waters. Laser 558 is owned and operated by URAD SA. It broadcasts in a totally free environment. At all times, this radio station endeavors to maintain standards of good taste and responsible technical operation. We will resume our transmissions of hit music this morning at 5 a.m. British time, 6 a.m. on the continent. Thanks for listening today, and have a good night.
Quite severe penalties have been given to British companies supplying the offshore stations under the so-called Marine Offences Act. Fines of £500 each were recently made to a group who supplied diesel oil to Radio Caroline. According to our reporter David Ward, who went down to Ewerton Anchorage near Harwich, where the ship is now being held, only two people are currently making money out of Laser. One is a farmer who's charging £1 for sightseers to cross his land to view the vessel, the other being someone who runs a £6 boat trip upstream to circle the radio ship. No comment has been made by the Irish millionaire, Philip Smith, said to have financed the whole operation. But Laser DJs have jokingly come up with explanations in the past designed to annoy the British government.
So that's the truth. We are owned by the BBC. The dioptric surveyor is being put out in the high seas by the IBA and the independent local radio stations, and they're starting their own... And the reason also that I know this is because, well, you don't know about this, Liz, but they came by the other day and they wanted to borrow some music. Yeah.
We don't have Lithuanian whale chanting.
Speaking of which, Pointer Sisters and Dare Me. Yes. Well, more coincidental, isn't it? No, but we do want to wish the folks at the IBA and the Dioptric Surveyor the best of luck with their new pirate station. And also, we want to ask the BBC, when are you guys sending us our checks?
I got a chip on my shoulder with your name on it.
Other former employees of Laser have publicly expressed concern that they haven't been paid for work they did on board. We phoned Laser's New York office a few hours ago to be greeted by this recorded statement.
Laser 558 is off the air because of a combination of circumstances. Bad weather, bad luck, and logistical problems, but certainly not because we lacked listener or advertiser support. Our ship, the MV Communicator, is undergoing inspections and maintenance work in Harwich Harbor. Our staff, American broadcasters, and marine crew are all safe and well. Our future plans are indefinite at this moment, but we appreciate your interest and support. No one's in our office in New York this week, but you may, if you wish, leave a short message.
But Laser's medium wave frequency of 558 kHz isn't empty. Under the motto, use it or lose it, the other music ship, Radio Caroline, didn't take long to abandon its problematic 576 kHz for Laser's dial position on Thursday.
Caroline 558, 8:32 the time. This is Joan Armour trading, kissing and hugging.
It's too early to say whether this is the last we'll hear of Laser. Its concept of top 40 American-style pop radio has certainly been very popular in this part of Europe, and there have been noticeable changes in programming from existing land-based stations on both sides of the North Sea. Britain clearly sees the offshore broadcasters as a threat to the existing broadcasting system, though how this will stand up in the forthcoming satellite age is another story. Radio Caroline says that because they're now supplied from Spain and Morocco, who didn't sign the Marine Offences Act, they don't think the continuing British government activities will have any effect. The Department of Trade and Industry's comment, however, is one down, one to go. Laser's antics of the past few months have an ironic touch to them now.
In all seriousness, to everybody I've poked fun at tonight, especially you guys on the optic surveyor, we really do love you. Can we have a round of applause for them, please? Bless all of you, okay? We know you're just doing your thing, and we don't mind, and we're just doing our thing. And bless the audience who have put up with me tonight, and bless all of those people who are monitoring us and have to write down everything I say, because, boy, have you got a lot of writing ahead of you. And I'd like to bless the management of this radio station, and bless all of us here on the boat, and bless our friends over at the Ross Revenge, because we'll see through all of this, no sweat. Remember, my friend, in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. I love you, and God loves you too. Nighty-night.
Like a boat out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through. One wish upon a star, your dreams come.
Well, you don't need to imagine the next item.
Watch out! It's a woodpecker from space!
Earlier this year, we told you about the Woodpecker Project, a non-profit, non-governmental survey organised by one of the committees of the Association of North American Radio Clubs. During specific days in the month of October, attempts will be made to track the movements across the shortwave radio dial of the Soviet over-the-horizon radar system, nicknamed the Woodpecker because of its sound. This system often causes interference to international broadcasters, and so volunteers were requested to help out. On the line from Washington is the project organizer, Bob Horowitz. So, Bob, how did it go?
Well, we're getting in the last of the monitoring reports from the people who signed up. We had enough monitors to cover 3 days completely. 2 days, we had enough monitors to do three monitors per time period around the clock. I haven't processed all of the returns yet, but just on a fast glance at the overall returns, it seems like there's only one transmitter site that was active during the monitoring period. That's the one on the east coast of Siberia.
Do you see this as a one-off situation, though, or are you going to try and do it again?
No, I don't think so. I think we got enough information to support the kind of report we wanted to circulate to the countries attending the HF Broadcasting Work in 1987. And you have to realize that aside from the monitoring reports, we also got a lot of publicity about the project in general, and that brought in correspondence from people who have been studying the woodpecker as ham radio operators or as radio technicians on their own over the years. We learned an awful lot about the system from scattered researchers that just had not shared their information before. And the project also attracted the interest of the Tektronix Corporation, and I'm very glad to say that they lent us the use of a spectrum analyzer for the month of October. And that was an incredible tool because it enabled us to see any portion of the radio spectrum. And with the proper settings, we could identify the woodpecker whenever and wherever it appeared. And we also made a small videotape, which we hope to show at the ANARC convention next summer.
And what about the U.S. radar? Has that turned up as yet?
Well, while we had the spectrum analyzer, I looked for the U.S. radar while we were looking for the woodpecker, And during the entire month of October, I didn't see it at all. So I honestly don't know what's become of the U.S. system.
Those who took part will be receiving a special verification card shortly and will be going back for further results in a few weeks' time.
Media Network News Update.
Elsewhere in the United States, things are busy as well. In California, Paul Hunter of the religious station KVOH tells us that the antenna towers for the new shortwave broadcaster went up yesterday, and the transmitter should be delivered in a few weeks. On-air testing will take place in the latter half of next month, though no date can be given yet. On the U.S. East Coast, in Bethel, Pennsylvania, station WMLK has returned to the airwaves for more tests after their transmitter suffered stability problems, so they say. Rebuilding the power supply was completed yesterday, and they're now on the air 18 to 20 hours UTC on 15110 kHz, midnight to 02 hours on 15300, and finally 05 to 07 hours UTC on 15150 kHz. The power is 50 kilowatts. And that same power is being used by Radio Australia, with a new frequency for New Zealand and Europe. Between 07 and 10 hours UTC, 9655 kHz, 9655 has appeared, giving fair to good reception here in Europe around 0810. On Saturday at this time, it carries the communications program Talkback.
But the coverage, because of their power and their location, is only about 42...
Well, last Thursday, as we were packing up the equipment after the European Space Lab mission, someone suggested we go into downtown Munich to sample the local delights, for this program, of course. And a stone's throw away from one of the major shopping streets here in downtown Munich on the Ludwigstrasse is a large grey impressive building. It's owned by one of the West German ministries, but on the third floor, unseen by passers-by, is a radio station. And we'll have to go inside to find out which one.
Maybe it would help if I started at the beginning. Our signal comes out of Washington and goes to an Intelsat satellite transponder high above the Atlantic, where it is downlinked from the satellite in Usingen, in the state of Hesse, not far from Frankfurt. From Usingen, it travels to Ludwigshafen by a land circuit, I believe a microwave circuit. In Ludwigshafen, Germany, the signal is uplinked to the ECS-1 satellite. Now, the ECS-1 satellite, the West Beam, has a footprint covering from Scandinavia to North Africa, which means that cable systems and terrestrial radio stations from Scandinavia to North Africa can downlink the signal, put it into the cable systems, or broadcast it on the air through normal transmitters.
That's Ross Petzing, project manager for VOA Europe, based in Munich. Just a month ago, the Voice of America resumed broadcasts to Western Europe, feeding primarily to cable systems scattered around Germany and some other European countries. Personnel are now busy phoning around Europe, offering the service right across the continent. So we called in for a bit more background on how it's going, and to ask why they hadn't put VOA Europe on medium or shortwave, like their services to Eastern Europe.
We are seeking medium wave and FM transmitter outlets to use frequencies that are idle or to make arrangements with broadcasters who are on existing medium wave and FM frequencies, and this is in fact taking place in Paris and some other cities where we're on FM. As far as shortwave is concerned, in Western Europe, as you probably know, shortwave is not used very much anymore. It was quite important decades ago, but we think only about 1% of the Western European population bothers listening to shortwave. Most people in continental Europe, Western Europe, are tuned to FM radio, VHF radio, except in Great Britain, the British Isles, where FM or VHF is becoming very important, but medium wave and even long wave are still viable.
That's Denise Williams, and let's hear it for the boy. Paul Anthony with you every single day.
Monday through Saturday. We do get Sunday off around here. Yes, indeed. They put the whips away and start beating us from 10 to 1. Talk, talk, keep talking. Play that music, play that music. And we listen now to take us to the top of the hour to the group Motels and Only the Lonely.
The vast bulk of the program material comes out of Washington, mainly for technical reasons. The studios, such as the one we're sitting in now, were designed in the 1950s. The equipment goes back to the 50s and 60s, and it's monaural. We will be doing broadcasting in stereo, and so these studios will be rebuilt for stereo work. We do have some European input. News from Europe, news headlines from Europe are produced here in Munich, fed back on a return circuit by satellite to Washington, where they're incorporated into the program. And also, we have announcements about what's happening in Europe, sort of a European-wide community bulletin board, if you will. Concerts, exhibitions, lectures, goings-on in Europe.
Although the service is unscrambled and can be received directly by any individual, the $3,000 price tag for a suitable dish and converter only makes it worthwhile for cable systems. The ECS is a low-power communication satellite. But with talk of higher-power direct broadcast satellites next year, or in 1987, designed for home reception, will VOA want to distribute a radio service in this way?
We feel that ultimately direct broadcasting satellites will have an important role to play in the broadcasting scene in Europe, and we intend to be on direct broadcasting satellites when they go up.
They are the Motels, and the tune is Only the Lonely. It takes us right up to 12 noon now, close to it anyway. And we'll listen to news, be back in 5 minutes for this afternoon on VOA Europe.
Good morning, everybody. Here's the news from VOA Europe. This is Kurt Henschen.
But what's the hook that will make Europeans with a variety of cultural backgrounds want to tune into an American radio station for news of what's happening in their area? And won't the radio cores be lost anyway to European-wide television like Sky Channel or Europa?
I don't think so. First of all, people listen to radio intensively, particularly in the morning hours. When they're getting up, they're getting ready for breakfast, they're eating breakfast, they're driving to work, and so on. They're not generally using a television receiver at that time. Television is used primarily in the evening. Obviously, it's important in the afternoon, too, but we feel that radio and TV will coexist together for quite some time to come.
One final question in terms of program philosophy. You were talking about, okay, people listening to the radio early in the morning. Don't most people in Europe want to hear a local news, what's happening, traffic information, for example, if they're driving to work? What's going to make them tune to VOA Europe that they won't get on the local station?
Well, we intend to have traffic reports. We already do carry traffic information, particularly on important routes heading toward vacation spots. If there is a snow slide on the Brenner Pass that has closed it down or is restricting traffic, we report that already. But also information they would not get because we cover Europe as a whole, whereas a local radio station may concentrate properly so on covering the activities in its own community.
Indeed, we're sitting in a rather old studio here. What's that been doing before? Because VOA Europe's only just started.
These studios have been in use since the 1950s. There was a time back in the early 50s when a lot of direct broadcasting to Western and Eastern Europe emanated from Munich. Colleagues in the engineering department who have been here for many years say that something in the order of 100, 150 employees were working here. There were five studios in continuous operation. This reduced down over the years to one operating studio used for the Voice of America correspondents here in Munich to feed their reports back to Washington by satellite. Now the tide will reverse a bit in that these studios, as I said, will be reconstructed for stereo work, and we expect that we will be doing a fair amount of programming from the Munich studios and also from other points in Europe. And from the United States, and indeed quite a bit of what might be called teleconference programming, where Europeans and Americans are on the air together in live broadcasts discussing important events of the day.
That was Ross Petzing of VOA Europe.
Africa Media News Desk.
And on the line from Southern Africa is Richard Jinby.
The changeover to summer in the Southern Hemisphere has not brought about any dramatic changes, apart from the usual swing to better conditions on higher frequencies than on lower portions of the spectrum. However, these conditions are extremely variable. One day good, the next bad. No hard and fast rules. So appearances by Radio Algiers on 17745 in English at 2000 hours and Africa number 1 on 15475 kHz are the exception rather than the rule. As one day they'll be there, the next the bands will be empty. So what's been heard lately? Well, Radio Mozambique is back with a number of shortwave transmitters at Maputo 3212 and variable 15296 kHz. The latter used during daylight hours UTC. This is a very noisy transmitter, so all you'll hear is the loud buzz given off by the transmitter and very little program modulation. 9525 is also back, carrying the regional service from Maputo and occasionally the external service at 1100 hours, in parallel to 11818 kHz. At 1800, the external service uses 3338 and 9618 kHz. Beta is also back on shortwave. The local A program is on 6090 0255 to 2205, while the B program is erratic on 9638 from 0255 to 2000 hours. In Angola, Lubitu has moved from 7172 to new 7193 kHz. Another country has gone stereo on FM, Zimbabwe, but only Radio 1 in the Harare area. Radio Bophuthatswana is to sign off an hour later from January at 2200 instead of 2100 hours, Sunday to Thursday. Fridays and Saturdays, they're 24 hours a day. A weekly program for listeners outside the country is to be added from the new year. The broadcast, in English, is tentatively scheduled at 1900 hours UTC on Fridays, with a repeat at midnight UTC on Sunday. It will be of an hour's duration. A new QSL card is also in the pipeline, and as proof of reception, Radio Bop prefers recorded reports.
And Richard adds that the voice of Kenya is being heard on a rather variable schedule, which seems to follow this pattern. The national service is on 6050 kHz, 03 to 0630 UTC, then moves to 11740 kHz, 0630 to 1530, and then back to 6050 kHz, 1530 to close down at 2010. The alternative general service is now on 7220 kHz, 03 to 0630, then 9725 kHz, 09 to 11 hours, and again 13 to 2006 UTC. Sign-off is 1 hour later at weekends. Finally, let's slip in this recording submitted by Richard Schweitzer in Hamburg. On November the 1st, he was tuning around and found 747 kHz, medium wave, around 10 hours UTC, with nothing but this. Yes, sirens all day. That was the Dutch domestic service transmitter, Hilversum 2. The broadcasting organisation responsible, the VPRO, decided to put out sirens all day in protest against the Dutch government decision to allow cruise missiles on Dutch soil. Mystery solved. And this is Jonathan Mark saying, back soon, bye for now.
Contributions to Media Network, Box 222, Hilversum, the Netherlands.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. It's, some people get static, some people get far-off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon, Bye for now.